I've been asked to announce that next week there will be no Shir Motzei Shushan Purim, which I might add, in view of my Hasidic roots and Irish roots, is probably the right decision. So we'll pick up in Mitzvah Shem in 2 weeks' time. In the meanwhile, let us address the Shir this evening to matters of Purim. There is an area, one of the mitzvahs of Purim, which for me certainly always received the lesser fare of attention, for it's rather straightforward, namely Matanas Lev Yonim. After all of the other mitzvahs, they're so multifaceted, so many possibilities, and Matanas Lev Yonim is very simple. But as we will see, there's quite a lot to discuss. It's one of the four mitzvahs of the day. The source, of course, in the Megillah itself, Yimei Mishte B'Simcha, Mishloach Monos, Ishlerei Ehu, Matonis Lev Yonim. Interestingly, the Gemara in Maseches Megillah on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph devotes precisely 5 words to the mitzvah of Matonis Lev Yonim. That's it. Says the Gemara, when the Pasuk says Matonos Lev Yonim, Shtei Matonos L'Shnei B'nei Adam. 2 gifts to 2 people. That's it. In contrast, of course, to Mishloach Monos Ish L'Rei Ehu, where the mitzvah is 2 gifts to 1 person, 2 monos to 1 person. But for Matonos Lev Yonim, it is 2 for 2, that is to say, 1 matona each. That actually is a very interesting parshanut point. For if we look at the words matonos lev yonim, we note that matonos is in the plural, and miut rabim shnayim, the minimum plural, will be 2. Evyonim is in the plural, 2 needy people, poor people, and the minimum is also 2. So there's 2 matonos for 2 evyonim. The question is, when you have 2 objects and 2 subjects, does the plurality of the object, is it distributed respectively amongst the plurality of the subjects, or does it accrue to each? And this is a question which is raised by the Pri Chodosh in his Perush to Shulchan Aruch. For we are saying that matonos le'evyonim means there's 2 matonos, but they are distributed between the 2 evyonim, so it's 1 for 1. He does actually draw our attention to certain areas in the Talmud where we have a similar situation, but the plurality actually occurs or accrues to each and every one of the subjects. And if that were the case, then matonos le'evyonim would be 2 matonos to each of the 2 evyonim. And he writes at length in a rather, actually not at length, but just briefly, but still complicated, explanation as to when it is that we say that the plurality of the object is distributed to the plurality of the subject, and when we say that it applies to each and every one. But certainly the halacha is, as we have stated it, that it is 1 matana to each of the 2 evyonim. The question is, what is a matana? What constitutes? What is the minimum amount, shall we say, that a person needs to fulfill this mitzvah? And this question is actually discussed by Rishonim. The Ritva, in his commentary to Maseches Megillah, states, if you wish to know what is the minimum amount that constitutes a matana, you need to know how the concept of nesina, of giving, is defined in halacha. Matana is a gift. It is the noun of nesina. What is the amount that is the lowest common denominator of what would be called given, lower than which one hasn't even given anything? This question is actually discussed in the Talmud in 2 places, in Psachim Daf Lamed Beis and in Gittin and Daf Kaf, and there it states, Ein Nesina Pachos Mishova Pruta. The smallest currency that is recognized by the halacha is what's called a shavuputa. It would equal a few agorot, the 5 agorot, if there exists such a thing anymore. And if it does, it's probably worth a lot more than 5 agorot. But that is the minimum amount that's called an asina. Less than that, nothing's happened. Nothing registers as having been given. A shava pruta is called an asina. And therefore, says the Ritva, if one were to give the evyon a shava pruta, that is matanis le'evyonim. One have fulfilled the mitzvah of the day. One probably will not have made a new friend out of that particular evyon, but nonetheless, that is the minimum requirement. And of course, kol hamarbe certainly hareze meshubach. Interestingly, the halacha states, in principle, that one shouldn't use what's called meiser money for matanis le'evyonim. But when you consider the bare minimum for matanis le'evyonim is 5 agurot, and beyond that, you're fine. So that is almost a moot point, in the sense of most of people's matanis le'evyonim is above and beyond the amount that they actually need to give. And this is also expressed in other Rishonim. The Shibboleth HaLeket quotes Rashi as saying this, Ein l'davar kitzva, there is no amount, even the smallest amount is matanis le'evyonim, and this is codified by the Mishnah Berurah, actually, in Hilchas Purim. However, we should note that not all authorities concur that such a minute almost amount of a shavar puta would qualify as matanis le'evyonim. The Maharsha, in his commentary to the Chiddush, to the Agodas there in Megillah and Daf Zayin, he maintains that actually matanis le'evyonim needs to be of greater value than mishloach manos. He derives it from the Gemara there. And for our purposes, what that means is that matanis le'evyonim, it does need to be something quite significant, not just a shavar pruta. And there is actually a very strong Sephardi tradition to this approach. The Chida, in the Sefer Machzik Bracha, so he quotes certain authorities who state that it has to be a significant amount, the amount actually that would acquire for him a basic meal, however that is defined. And what's interesting is, with regards to the point of the Ritva, I mean, the Ritva has established his position based on the Gemara. The Gemara says that Nesina, if you wish to know what's the Matana, Nesina is a Shavar Pruta. That if you, once you've given a Pruta's worth, then you've given. Why then would these authorities insist that it has to be more than a Shavar Pruta? And the Chida says something very interesting. Matana, a gift, is the noun that derives from nesina, giving. But a gift has to be more than what constitutes as giving. In other words, it is not merely a grammatical translation from a verb to a noun. As surely as, and lahavdil, but I think it's very helpful for us. Anything can be given. But not anything constitutes a gift, even in our terminology. That is to say, for the verb to turn into a noun, it has to be a certain significant entity. Not anything that was given is a gift. If one could perhaps even further illustrate that, not everything that's spoken is a speech. Even a word can be spoken, but a speech represents some type of significant assembly of words. So too, says the Chida, the Talmud tells us that the verb nesina will apply even to that small amount of a shavar pruta. Quite true. But the pasuk in Megillas Esther didn't say give to the evyonim. It says there should be gifts to the evyonim. Giving may be of shavar pruta. A gift has to be more. And therefore the Chida and the Kaf HaChaim and the Ben Ish Chai, it's a very strongly held Sephardi approach, is that Mishloach Monos needs to be something, some type of significant amount. That said, the Mishnah Berurah remains with the Ritva, that it's a Shavar Puta. Perhaps the Evyonim will patronize our Sephardi shuls more than Ashkenazi shuls on Purim, although I think it, practically in this respect, the field is leveled and all give generously. A very interesting question, which can have many practical ramifications, is whether or not the money needs to be given on Purim. Often, one may not have direct contact, or even indirect contact, with Evyonim, although again, things are highly organized nowadays. But nonetheless, the question remains in principle. Is it acceptable if one were to give Matanis Levyonim a day or two before Purim, for use on Purim, is that okay? And the famous posek to comment on this is the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham quotes the Balamor, who says that one should not give Matanis Le'evyonim before Purim. Why not? Says Balamor, because it's the nature of Evyonim that the money might not make it into Purim. 2 days is a long time. So if one gives it 2 days beforehand, of course the goal is that the money should be used on and enjoyed on Purim. It may be a matter of history by the time Purim comes. And therefore, says Balamor, the money should only be given on Purim so that it will be used on Purim. That is the Pesach of the Balamor quoted by the Magen Avraham. What's very interesting is, as much as the Magen Avraham has stated that one shouldn't give the money before Purim, the essential implication of the Magen Avraham is that one can. Because the problem that is voiced by the Magen Avraham, quoting the Balamor, is, shall we say, a practical problem. It's a technical problem. If you give them the money 2 days before Purim, that's the last day that money will exist with them. And it will never make it to Purim. The implication is that there doesn't seem to be a problem in principle to fulfill the mitzvah by the fact that you gave it 2 days before. Just practically, it won't make it to Purim. Implying, if you were able to find a way that I will give the money 2 days before Purim, but I can vouchsafe that it will not be used before Purim. It sounds like it would be acceptable. And that may mean that if a person posted money, which would take 2 or 3 days, and he's relinquished it, he released it, two or three days before Purim, and it gets to the Evyon on Purim. It sounds like the Evyon, he couldn't possibly get to it before Purim. The fact that you gave it 2 or 3 days before is actually acceptable. And this is the opinion of a number of poskim. Although it's actually a chiddush, because the mitzvahs of the day, the performance of the mitzvahs of the day, would seem to require that they are performed on the day. Here is a person, he may have taken care of his matonis le'evyonim input, shall we say, before Purim even happened. But that seems to be the position of the Magen Avraham. Others argue pointedly on this matter. The Aruch HaShulchan is famous for his disputing this. The Aruch HaShulchan says it's like every mitzvah of Purim, it's got to be fulfilled on the day, and therefore you can't give Matanis Le'evyonim before Purim, even if you knew that they wouldn't be used before Purim. However, and it's an important caveat because this could change many things, says Aruch HaShulchan, there is a way for you to give Matanis Le'evyonim, even according to the more stringent approach, and it can still work out perfectly. For as we know, a mitzvah like Matanis Le'evyonim, one should perform it personally. It is perfectly acceptable to perform it via a shaliach. I can get someone to give the money for me. If it's my money, he can do the delivery for me. And therefore, says Aruch HaShulchan, the recommended course for someone who wishes to give their money beforehand is very simply not to give it to anyone yet, if it's 2 or 3 days before Purim. Rather, to deposit it with the Gabbai Tzedakah. It doesn't yet belong to the poor. It's actually still your money. He is a custodian for that money. He's looking after it for you. And then, come the day of Purim, 2 or 3 days later, then you have requested of him, he should give it to the Evyonim on your behalf. That means that you fulfilled the mitzvah of Matanis Le'evyonim on Purim, because the mitzvah, the money is being given for you on Purim itself. And this is actually quite a widespread practice. Therefore, those who circulate before Purim, they will say, if you hand the money to us and if they're trustworthy people, we will hold it for you, we'll hold your money for you, and then deliver it for you on the day of Purim. That is a bona fide Matanis Le'evyonim. Interestingly, although we normally give money, Matanis Le'evyonim, the Rambam in Hilchos Megillah, Perek Beis, Halacha Tet Zayin, actually states that one can fulfill the mitzvah of Matanos Le'Evyonim through money or food. And actually, when you think about it, Matanos means gifts. In principle, it sounds like it could be any gift. If anything, it's a chiddush of the Rambam that it's restricted to money or food. But it's certainly in contrast to Mishloach Monos, which is food-specific. But Matanos Le'Evyonim is money or food. For us who give through a shaliach, I think money travels more neatly than food. But it raises an interesting shaila, namely, a person could actually use food for Matanos Le'Evyonim. The question is, what if he delivered it as Mishloach Manos? And perhaps it is actually a very mehudadik way of giving Matanos Le'Evyonim. Some people, lo aleinu, but they're embarrassed to receive gifts. No one's embarrassed to receive Mishloach Manos. Everyone's happy to receive Mishloach Manos. And therefore, it seems that if one delivered a very nice food package, which the Ani desperately needs, but one gives it as Mishloach Manos, one would certainly fulfill the mitzvah of Matanos Le'Evyonim to him and to another. So having discussed some of the details, and they're very interesting details, of this mitzvah of Matanos Le'Evyonim, there is a fundamental question with regards to this mitzvah, which is really fascinating. And it's raised by Ritzvi Pesach Frank in his Sefer Mikroi Kodesh. He has volumes on all of the Moadim. This is not in his volume on Purim, actually. The third volume of Pesach, which came out last, has supplementary pieces on all of the other Moadim. So in Pesach volume 3, at the end, he discusses this question of Matanos Le'Evyonim. And the question is as follows. What is the nature of Matanos Le'Evyonim? Well, you know what form it takes. It takes the form of gifts to the poor. But what is the nature of the mitzvah? And what is the background to the question? It's possible, says Ratzi Pesach Frank, to view the mitzvah of Matanos Le'Evyonim in one of two ways. It could be, as it seems, that it is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of tzedakah. The mitzvah of tzedakah is a very interesting mitzvah because it's an ongoing mitzvah, but it's not necessarily a daily mitzvah. It's not like the mitzvah of tefillin or tefillah, whereby every day brings with it that day's fulfillment and no other day can really compensate for a day missed. There is not necessarily a requirement per se to give tzedakah every day. It's not a daily mitzvah, but it is an ongoing mitzvah. One should generally distribute their tzedakah on occasion, where appropriate, and sometimes subject to circumstance, if approached, if solicited. But in terms of actively pursuing the mitzvah of tzedakah, it's a wonderful thing. It's a minhag from the Gemara to give tzedakah before davening. Ani betzedek echazeh panecha. Many people give during the section of Vayivarech David in Psukei Dezimra. That's quite popular. In fact, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says an amazing thing. People stand at Vayivarech David, and the shaila is why. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says the reason why the tzibur stands in shul at Vayivarech David is because of the minhag of giving tzedakah during that section. Because the gabbai would go around shul collecting, and he is thus in the performance of a mitzvah. The Mishnah says in Maseches Bikurim that when people who were bringing their bikurim were on their way through any town, the townspeople used to stop and stand up for them. Because that there is a mitzvah to stand up in respect for a person who's doing a mitzvah. And Rabbi Yaakov said that the kahal stands at Vayivarech David out of respect for the gabbai tzedakah who is collecting tzedakah at that point. Very interesting. So that's one minhag in terms of collecting tzedakah there. There's a minhag which is quite popular as well as during Chazaras Hashatz, which, if it stops people from talking, is certainly a worthy thing. But in terms of an obligation, there is no daily obligation. However, there are certain times when giving tzedakah is emphasized heavily before Pesach, Kimcha de Pischa, for Pesach reasons, in a slightly different way during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Utshuva tefilo tzedakah, avrinas roa gezeira. So tzedakah becomes emphasized or activated highly as a value at certain junctures. And perhaps Purim is no different. Purim has its own needs, tzarchei tzuda, tzarchei hayom, and therefore it became one of those, it became a lightning rod for the mitzvah of tzedakah. This is one day where you can't say, I'll give tomorrow, or I gave yesterday, or I gave at the office, but you have to give today. But at heart, it really is, as we said, an activation of the mitzvah of tzedakah. That perhaps is the simpler approach. So of all the four mitzvahs of Purim, one of them in principle is a mitzvah the whole year round. It's just today, it's non-negotiable. The other possibility, says R. Frank, is that it could be that the mitzvah of Matonis Le'evyonim, it takes the form of tzedakah, but b'mahut, in its essence, it is more part of the promoting of simcha on Purim. Purim, are the days of Purim, are Yemei Mishteh V'Simcha. It's a day of happiness. Matonis Le'evyonim is enlisted in the service of promoting simcha for all on Purim. And it does the job, I mean, if done properly. So it's very interesting because there's so many, there are other manifestations of simcha, the Mishteh itself, but one of an essential, and a critical part of Simchas Hayom is Matonis Le'evyonim. And indeed, this matter is discussed explicitly by one of the Rishonim, the Ritva again in Maseches Bo Metzia, and Daf Ayin Ches. And the Ritva states, with regards to a halacha that's rather complicated, we won't go into the halacha, but just to see the principle, he says, Matonis Le'evyonim eino tzedakah greater. It is not, quote-unquote, merely tzedakah, or purely tzedakah. Rather, ela simchas hayom. It is a mitzvah that's mandated in order to further develop and enhance the simcha of the day. What's fascinating is, this seems to be the approach of the Rambam as well. Certainly by association, and his words, and these are his final words, actually, on the mitzvah of Matonis Le'evyonim, almost his final words on the halachas of Purim. In Perek Beis of Hilchos Megillah, Halacha Yud Zayin, the Rambam states, well worth knowing, as of course we will see, Mutav la'adam, laharbos b'matonis evyonim, it is better for a person to increase in Matonis Evyonim, mi laharbos b'su'udoso uvishiluach monos l'reyav. Better to emphasize and to prioritize funds for Matonis Le'evyonim over the expenditure for the su'uda and for mishluach monos. Why? Rambam explains, she'ein sham simcha gedola u'mefu'ara, for there is no greater and more glorious simcha, ele l'sameach leiv aniyim v'yisomim v'amanos v'geirim. There is no greater simcha than to bring simcha to those in need. So it's a fascinating explanation. Firstly, the halachic position is exceedingly important in terms of prioritizing, that Matonis Le'evyonim should get the greatest share of Purim funds. But when the Rambam went on to explain it, he explained it in terms of simcha. There's no greater joy than to bring joy to these people who are in need. And it's very clear that the joy he's referring to is the joy of the giver. There is no greater joy for the giver than to bring joy to people who are miserable or destitute. And that very clearly seems to align the mitzvah Matanis Le'evyonim in terms of simcha. If it's all part of the fabric of simcha sayom, this is the greatest simcha, that's why she have the greatest allocation of funds. So this is a very interesting way of looking at Matanis Le'evyonim. It is enhancing one's simcha sayom through bringing joy to others. And interestingly, the Mikroi Kodesh points out that this point may well be disputed, the subject of a dispute between early Acharonim, and it could have halachic ramifications. Everyone is obligated in the mitzvah of Matonis Le'evyonim. Okay. The question is, what about an Evyon? What about someone who's poor? He's actually on the receiving end. And shall we, legitimately so? Does he have a mitzvah of Matanos Le'Evyonim? He'll probably favor the Shavah Prutah approach. But nonetheless, in principle, does he have an obligation? Says the Bach. Yes. Where possible, he's obligated in all the mitzvahs of the day, to the extent that he can. He has a mitzvah of Mishloach Manos if he can. Not everybody can. The Gemara actually tells of two Amoraim, neither had anything. They used to exchange their Purim Suddas so as to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos and yet have something to eat at the end of the day. Okay, so be it. But they made provisions for the mitzvah. So too, says the Bach, Matanos Le'Evyonim is one of the mitzvahs of the day. To the extent that he can, he needs to allocate some of his own Matanos Le'Evyonim and give it to another Evyon. Very interesting. He's not exempt from mitzvahs. Says the Pri Chadosh, he may not be exempt from mitzvahs, but we know that an Oni is not obligated to give tzedakah. That is to say, if he's on the receiving end of tzedakah, once a year he has to give a token amount to tzedakah so as to be in the game on some level. But on an ongoing basis, the halacha is that someone himself, unfortunately, is a recipient of tzedakah. He's exempt from giving tzedakah, says the Pri Chadosh. So that means that Matanos Le'Evyonim, he's just not part of that bracket. And he's exempt. It's a very interesting shaila. Is the Evyon obligated in Matanos Le'Evyonim? Says Otzi Pesach Frank, it would seem that these two authorities, the Bach and the Pri Chadosh, are disputing the question as to what is the nature of the mitzvah of Matanos Le'Evyonim. If we say that Matanos Le'Evyonim is, shall we call it, targeted tzedakah, that is to say, it derives ultimately from the mitzvah of tzedakah, well, if you don't have that mitzvah as a matter of generality, you're not going to have it specifically today. And that's the opinion of the Pri Chadosh, that it's a mitzvah of tzedakah and an Evyon is potter from tzedakah. But if you say that no, it takes the form of tzedakah, but at its heart, it's the mitzvah of Simchas Purim, everyone's obligated in Simchas Purim, and if you only can, this is not tzedakah. In terms of its root, it's Simchas Purim, and an Evyon also has to make someone else feel better. So that's an interesting shaila lahalacha, which may well be the nafkimina, so to speak, from this question as to what is the nature of Matanos Le'Evyonim. It's fascinating to note Rabbi Asher Weiss, in his ma'amar on this question, he actually brings us back to the pasuk in a fascinating way. For the words where these mitzvahs come from, la sos osam yemei mishte besimcha u'mishloach manos ish l'ri'ehu u'matanos le'evyonim. We should note that the pasuk, that's in Perek Tes of Megillas Esther, the pasuk has mentioned four things: days of mishte, feasting; simcha, joy; and then gave us two mitzvahs, Mishloach Manos and Matanos Le'Evyonim. It seems that the correct alignment of these four phrases is not in a straight line, but rather as a square, in the sense that the pasuk has begun by introducing two aspects of the day, Mishte and Simcha. It then proceeds to qualify them by presenting the two mitzvahs that express these two qualities respectively. That is to say, if the two aspects of the day are Mishta and Simcha, they are expressed respectively by Mishloach Manos and Matanos Le'Evyonim. Mishloach Manos, as we've discussed many times in the opinion of the Truma Sedeshin, is primarily to ensure that others have the wherewithal for their Su'ud of Purim. And therefore, Mishloach Manos is the halachic function of, or expression of, Mishta. And then, of course, Matanos Le'Evyonim now becomes the halachic expression of Simcha. So Mishta and Simcha as atmospheric values become translated into the mitzvahs of Mishloach Manos and Matanos Le'Evyonim. It's very interesting to note as a concluding point, I would just, with regards to this question, this may have ramifications for what is the minimum amount for Matanos Le'Evyonim, which is the question that we mentioned before. After all, it stands to reason that if it is a mitzvah of tzedakah, then presumably, as much as there's an obligation today, but the obligation isn't in excess of tzedakah generally, and tzedakah one it fulfills with the shavar pruta, even with that small amount. However, one may certainly posit that if the goal, and moreover, not only the goal of the mitzvah, but the roots of the mitzvah are to bring simcha to others, it's reasonable that the amount that one would have to give is the amount that brings simcha to others. It's likely that to give a shavar pruta, 5 agorot's worth to an evyon, will not bring him joy on Purim. It may actually only aggravate his condition. And therefore, it may be a good working definition for the amount of matanos evyonim, the amount that would give him, make him happy. Of course, that's a very personal thing, but nonetheless, as a value. Just a final comment with regards to matanos le'evyonim, and that is that it's, of all the mitzvahs of Purim, one could say it is of the most powerful mitzvahs. And when we say powerful, we mean that it has the power to move other mitzvahs. And let me explain what that means. The well-known halacha, which can happen here in Yerushalayim, also in Shushan, but better here in Yerushalayim, is when Purim falls on Shabbos, so then Purim splits up into three. And very little of the mitzvahs of Purim are actually done on Shabbos itself. The Seudah goes till Sunday, as with Mishloach Manos. The reading of the Megillah is brought forward to Friday, as is Matanos Le'evyonim. The question is, why is the Megillah not read on Shabbos? Now, the well-known answer is that Megillah on Shabbos is very similar to Shofar on Shabbos and Lulav on Shabbos, and there was the worry that a person may come to carry, which is that whole discussion, and indeed the rabbi does say that in the Gemara. Megillah is dealt with in exactly the same way as Shofar and Lulav on Shabbos. It's suspended, what shouldn't come to carry. It's moved to Friday. That's one opinion in the Gemara. But the second opinion, Rabbi Yosef, states, amazingly, the reason why when Purim falls on Shabbos, the Megillah is not read on Shabbos is because Matanos Le'evyonim have to be given on the day the Megillah is read. The ultimate focal group of Matanos Le'evyonim are the Evyonim. We have to do what's best for them. And you cannot compare the money that's given when you've just read Megillas Esther to a different day, tomorrow or yesterday. In the words of the Gemara, Einehem shalaniyim nesuos lekriyas haMegillah. They wait for the reading of the Megillah, because when everyone reads the Megillah, by the time it's finished, their hearts are open and their wallets are open. But when that wears off, they'll still give, but not the same. Ad kedei kach. And therefore, if the Megillah, it seems for Rav Yosef, Megillah is not like Shofar and Lulav. In principle, you could read it on Shabbos, but then if you read the Megillah on Shabbos, and then you come to give Matanos Le'evyonim on a different day, it's not the same. So powerful is the mitzvah of Matanos Le'evyonim, it moves the mitzvah of Megillah from its quote-unquote rightful place on Shabbos. Read it Friday, because you can't give Matanos Le'evyonim on Shabbos. You can give on Friday, and therefore Megillah follows Matanos Le'evyonim, which is an amazing thing. It's the power of Matanos Le'evyonim. Now, I'd like to go back to the words of the Rambam, who spoke about prioritizing Matanos Le'evyonim, because there's actually the final line of that halacha, which we didn't yet read. We'll begin again from halacha Yud Zayin. Mutav la'adam lahabos b'matanos le'evyonim. Better for a person, preferable to increase, prioritize matanos le'evyonim, mi laharbas b'sudoso v'shloach manos. Better than for expending it on the Su'uda and Mishloach Manos, L'Reyav. As Rambam explains, She'en sham simcha gedola u'mefo'ara el sameach levaniyim. There's no greater simcha than to bring joy to the needy. Which, as we noted, means it's in service of simcha sayom. This is the ultimate simcha sayom. And then, says Rambam, concludes, She'ham sameach lev ha'umlalim ha'ele. If a person gladdens the heart of these destitute people, domel eshchina. He's like the divine presence itself. Shine emar, Pasuk in Yeshaya, La'achayos ruach shefalim u'la'achayos lev nitka'im. To enliven and raise the spirits of the drowned, downtrodden, and of the lowly. That's a description of Hashem. It's an Haftarah from Yom Kippur, I believe. So this is a very interesting conclusion of the Rambam. It really takes off. Not only is it the greatest simcha, but says Rambam, moreover, this person, he's likened to the Shechina. He's acting in accordance with the Shechina. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu gladdens the hearts of the needy, and this person is doing likewise. And it's very interesting to ponder the place of these words within the general tone and picture of Purim. One could argue that the halacha has been set in Purim terms without this conclusion. And it's always true that if a person helps the needy, he's like the Shechina. That's a halacha in Hilchot Tzedakah. It's no longer in the simcha of Purim. The Rambam's point that it's the greatest simcha, that's a Purim statement, because Purim is days of Mishnah and Simcha. The Rambam's statement, the one who helps the needy is like the Shechina, that's a Tzedakah statement. It's true every day. But the Rambam said it with regards to Purim. The Gemara in Maseches Chulin, Daf Kaf Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, seeks famously to find allusions to certain personalities of the Megillah, more than any other sefer, in the Torah. And each drasha, of course, is a discussion on its own. But one of them is Haman. It's looking for Haman. Haman min haTorah minayin. Where do we find Haman from the Torah? And Mefarshim already asking, don't find him in the Torah. Dayel etzara b'shata. We can do without him until he arrives. But the Gemara is looking to find him. It is something that he represents, and it's got to be traced back to a certain root. And traced back it is, because Haman is actually the earliest person from the Megillah to be found in the Chumash. Hamin ha'etz hazeh. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu rebuking Adam for eating from the Eitz Hadas. Hamin ha'etz hazeh. The Gemara equates those two words. Hamin, Haman. That needs to be examined without a doubt. What's Haman got to do with Hamin ha'etz hazeh? There's a very distressing, actually, section of the Megillah in the end of Perek Dalet, where Mordechai says to Esther, the Jewish people are in trouble, you've got to help, go to Ahasuerus, you have to intercede. And Esther says, okay, I will. But in terms of timing, everyone knows if someone goes to the king, he hasn't been called, he'll be killed. I haven't been called for a month. It's any day now. The Gezerah, the execution of the Gezerah, is 11 months away. And the Purim story happens on Pesach, 11 months before Purim, actually, most of the story. And maybe I should just wait. Mordechai's response to Esther, I think it's fair to say, is very harsh. As we know, he says, don't think that you will escape. Because if you're quiet at this time, the Jewish people will be saved from somewhere else. You and your father's house, you will be lost. Who knows if it wasn't for this time that you actually became the queen? It's very strongly worded, Mordechai's response. So Esther seems to be quite reasonable in terms of what she's suggesting. She didn't say she won't go. She said she'll go, but it's a matter of timing. So a few days' time, and Mordechai castigates her. Don't think that you'll be saved. The Jewish people will be saved. You'll be lost. Why doesn't he give her those few extra days? And it's very interesting to note that he says, "At uveisavich tovedu, you and your father's household." How are her father's household in any way connected to this? A further interest is that her father's household is Mordechai's father's household. I mean, they're related. He's her uncle. But in this context, it's at uveisavich. this Shabbos is Shabbos Zohar, and the Haftarah for Zohar is the historic war with Amalek, between Shaul and Amalek. As we know, Shaul was commanded to kill all of Amalek, which he didn't do. He was commanded to destroy everything about Amalek, people, and also their livestock. And he didn't do that. Rather, he left Agag, he left the king alive, he left their animals alive. Now, when Shmuel comes to him, after the war, so he greets Shmuel and says, Vayavo Shmuel al Shaul, Vayomel al Shaul, Baruch atal Hashem, Hakimosi es devar Hashem. I have upheld Hashem's word. Now, these words are very difficult to understand because he very clearly didn't uphold Devar Hashem. He may have an excuse as to why he didn't, but how can the first things that he say, words that he say to Shmuel are, I have fulfilled Hashem's word? He should probably have changed the subject. Clearly, Shaul understands that in sparing the animals, with that, he has upheld Devar Hashem. That is to say, although he was told to kill them, nonetheless, he didn't kill them, but he still considers that to be upholding Devar Hashem. And in fact, he goes on to explain why. He says, "Two psukim's time, Vayomer Shaul me'amaleki aviyum." These are Amaleki animals. Asher chamal ha'ama meta vatzon va'bakar. They had compassion, rachmanus, on the best of them. Lema'an zavoach la'shem elokecha. In order to bring them as korbanos, as zavochim. And therefore, when Shaul says, Hakimos yes devar Hashem, I've fulfilled Hashem's word, what he's saying is, I've upheld it, because in the end, Hashem will gain from them as korbanos more than he would have as them just being destroyed. So I'm working in Hashem's interests. Even though he was told to destroy them, what does Shaul have to say about that? Nothing, really. In the sense that for Shaul, he feels that he received an instruction, but he could do better than that instruction. There were all sorts of pressures, quite so, but this is his presentation of the situation. So not actually following Hashem's word to the letter wasn't something that was denied or even excused. It was glorified, actually, because there was a certain aspect of Shaul's approach here which says that he could actually do better for Hashem's cause than even what was told him in Hashem's name. He was told to destroy them, but if I bring them as korbanos, that's an even better idea. And this was a very difficult time for Shaul. It's a very difficult problem. And the truth is, this wasn't the only time that Shaul, in a sense, second-guessed the instructions that he was given, specifically with regards to Amalek. As the war begins, it says he got his army together. Aseres alafim has issued vayavo Shaul el Adir Amalek vayorev banachal. He fought or contended in the nachal, in the stream. The Gemara says in Maseches Yomim Daf Kaf Beis vayorev banachal means he put forward an argument to Hashem based on the nachal. What does that mean? The nachal represents the egla rufa. If someone is killed, no one knows who killed them, so that the egla is taken, it's killed in a nachal. Nachal Eson, what's called. Vayar banachal says, the Gemara means Shaul argued. Isn't this an egla rufa situation? Isn't this a nachal situation where if one person is killed, we make a whole big deal out of it? And we bring an egla rufa, and you kill it in the nachal because such a human life was lost. And here I'm being told to destroy all these people, and how can this be okay with Nachal, with Egla Rufa? So it's a very difficult episode here, because Shaul is having, in a sense, pangs of conscience, or and coming up with better ideas as to what to do with Amalek than he was told. That's really what identifies the problem with Shaul. When, oversimplifying, of course, not that we can fully or even partially understand Shaul, but only the extent that we are meant to learn from it. Shmuel answers Shaul and says, well, it sounds like he's stating the obvious, but he says, you kept them alive to bring them as korbanos. But Vayomer Shmuel, Hachayfet Lashem Ba'olus Uzvachim, Kishmo B'kol Hashem, do you think Hashem wants the korbanos more than he wants you to listen to him? Hinei Shemoa Mizevach Tov, listening to Hashem is better than bringing a korban. So you didn't listen to him in order to bring a korban, but to listen to him is better. So it's an interesting statement, because it sounds like we're comparing mitzvahs, so to speak. Following instructions is more important than bringing a korban. But it could be that there's more to it than that. David Cohen, one of the Rosh Hashivas of Hebron, explains that one of the basic ideas of a korban and bringing an animal, so much to discuss, but on the most basic level, to bring an animal and then to kill it and then to burn it, it's about the nullification of existence before Hashem. And it's meant to represent the nullification of the person before Hashem. The animal is like meant to be a proxy for the person. That's what a korban is, and that's what brings a person closer to Hashem. The more he stands upright in the sense of independent, the more he stands apart. And therefore it's the nullification that is mekarev a person to Hashem. What Shmuel is saying isn't that listening to Hashem is a greater mitzvah than bringing a korban. Listening to Hashem is a greater korban than bringing a zevach. Because that is what the issue that a person needs to contend with. Everyone has their ideas. If you took a survey, there'd be other ideas as to what to do with Amalek and what to do in any given situation. But when a person receives a directive from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the question is, do I follow my own path, or do I nullify my ideas to what obviously is the better idea, coming as it does from the infinite wisdom of Hashem? To do that, that's a korban. And that a person is nullifying the most human quality of a person, which is his das. So when Shmuel says it was wrong to ignore Hashem's command to bring them as a korban, he wasn't just saying that you lost the mitzvah, but you, even if you gained a korban, you lost the greater korban. That's your korban, is to set aside what you would have thought in the face of what you're being told from Hashem. And it is over this that Shaul lost the melucha. As Shmuel says, the melucha has been taken away from you, will be given to someone better than you. And the reason why is because a melech can have faults. But if a melech feels that he has a better idea as to how the Jewish people should function than Hashem's ideas, he can't be a melech for Yisrael. Because the whole institution of melech is volatile in that way. It's authority, but it's only appropriate if it's an expression of Hashem's authority. As soon as the melech has his own ideas, he may well set up a separate address for authority. And therefore, what's represented by Shaul and the way that he dealt with Amalek is that he took his own path clearly in violation of what he was told to do, because he thought it was better. So he cannot be left to run the Jewish people, because he may have other ideas as to what's good for the Jewish people, completely in contrast to the way the Torah says the Jewish people should live. That's the Haftarah for Parshas Zachor. The Jewish people, many, many years later, were in a similar situation. The Gemara identifies the problem that led to the decree of Haman, is going to Achashverosh's feast. And the Maharal in the Sefer Or Chodosh wonders, if one may, it wasn't a mitzvah, it was an aveira, but why was it an aveira that warranted annihilation? Let's say the food wasn't kosher. Eating non-kosher food is an aveira, but it's not a nation-destroying aveira. Says Maharal, it wasn't so much what happened at the Suda, but the attitude that drove the Jewish people to the Suda. All sorts of non-kosher things were happening at the Suda. The question is it good for the Jews to go or bad? It's full of averus. The attitude of the Jewish people at that time was, we have to get ahead. And this is what will bring take us further in life. This is how we'll succeed. It's regrettable that we have to step on a few mitzvahs, but we can't afford not to go to the Suda because everyone who's anyone will be there. And this is how we'll meet the right people, say the right things. And that's what was wrong with going to Achashverosh's feast. It's a world view as to what is the path of success for the Jewish people. The root of all of this, both Shaul and the Jewish people, in terms of, is the best thing for us what the Torah tells us to do, or perhaps what we would imagine is the best thing for us. The root of all of this is actually the Eitz Hadas. Because the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra offers Adam his own way of knowing what's right and what's wrong. In addition to, and sometimes in contrast to, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him is right and wrong. That's the appeal. You can decide. You can set up your value system, and you can know what's right and what's wrong. Initially, Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas for the right reasons. It's better that I should know. If I know, I'll be operating out of full knowledge. It's a fuller avodah. It's a better korban. Even though he was told not to eat from the tree, but better to step on that specific prohibition, because the result will be a greater type of spiritual lifestyle. But in the end, it's more than that. It's an entire new system of what constitutes good and evil, which may not at all coincide with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's definitions of good and evil. And once that is released, alternative value systems, the Jewish people, the nth degree exacerbation of this, or aggravation of this notion, is someone may have a value system where there's no room for the Jewish people in it. And there have been people like that. And one of those people is Haman. Haman's sense of correct and incorrect was the conclusion, the bottom of the slippery slope that began with the Eitz Hadas. Because Adam thinks he can decide what's right and wrong, and then at the end, meeting him is Haman, who he has his own ideas of what's right and wrong. It's wrong for the Jewish people to be here. They're disturbing everyone. They're getting in the way. And that is why the Gemara says, Haman min HaTorah minayin, where do you have such a horrific value system? And it was its own type of value system, and remains so amongst the nations of the world. They have been empowered by the original subscription to Eitz Hadas, to one figuring out independently the whole balance of right and wrong. This was repeated now by the Jewish people as they made their own value decisions, and they decided it's better to go to Achashverosh's feast. That is why Mordechai's behavior throughout the Megillah is anti-political. In today's terminology, it is politically non-correct. He does all the gauche things. Everyone's bowing down to Haman except for Mordechai, and he makes a point of it. And the reason why is because Mordechai needs to redress the balance. That the holy cow of the Jewish people has become doing the right thing politically. And Mordechai needs to redress that. So he makes a point of doing the wrong thing. And then he says to Esther, Haman will be destroyed if you right the wrongs of your grandfather. That is to say, Haman is only alive because Shaul left Agag alive. And he left him alive because honor among kings. It's the right thing to do. He was told to kill him, but he felt it was better to leave him alive. And the result is Haman. Esther has to finish that. And the Medrash actually notes that the very same phraseology, same template that had the Malchus taken away from Shaul, had the Malchus given back to Esther. In the Haftarah we just quoted, Shmuel says to Shaul, your Malchus will be taken, Unisana l'reicha hatov mimcha, be given to your better. In Perek Aleph of Megillas Esther, Vashti was to be killed. Umalchusai tena melech lirusa hatova mimena. Esther is getting back the malchus of Shaul in order to right the wrong of Shaul. And that's why Mordechai says to Esther, politically you should wait a few days, but not this time, because you need to expedite and ignore all of those considerations. And if you don't, at uves avich tovedu, because you are the last chance to bring to rectify your ancestors' avera. You can bring around to a good conclusion. And so the story of Purim is really about this, about instilling in the Jewish consciousness that sometimes our own charting our own destiny can bring disaster for us. That's what we tried to do in the story of Ahasuerus, and Haman came. Which is why when we were saved, we find that there was a renewed Kabbalah Satorah, because perhaps we underappreciated the Torah the first time round, 1,000 years ago. Because it's no doubt wise and good and valuable, but we also have a say. When we saw how our say led us to near annihilation, we took hold of the Torah again with both hands. Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar. And that's responsible for the mitzvah, according to some, of Adlo Yoda, that a person needs to, in a sense, relinquish their das on Purim, because our das sometimes is our worst enemy. When it's used responsibly, it's our greatest asset. But when it's used heretically, it brings us to a great deal of trouble. And this brings us back to the final words of the Rambam. The Eitz HaDas is the nemesis of the Eitz HaChaim. The appeal for Adam to eat from the Eitz HaDas was said by the Nachash, and the Nachash is the beginning of Haman. We say on Purim, Mishoresh Nachash Yatzat Tzefa. Haman came from the Nachash. It's the same idea. Mina Eitz HaZeh. V'yisim kelokim. It's good for you to eat from the Eitz HaDas. If you do, you'll be like God. Don't you want to be like God? But this is an illegal way, an illusionary way of being like God. And it led to only distancing further and further away. And so we eschew that and we avoid it. But the Shaila is, so is there any way to be like God? As if to say, if we relinquish the false advertising of the Eitz HaDas, if you eat from this tree, then you'll be like God. But that's not really true. That's a fantasy. So is there no way? The answer is there is. Uvosid bakun, to cleave to Hashem, says the Gemara, means hidavik b'midosav, cleave to his midos. Emulate him. Don't try and second guess him. You will lose. But emulate him. That's closeness. Spiritual proximity is similarity. The more you're like him, the closer you are to him. And I believe, well, Libi Omerli, that this is contained within the final words of the Rambam. The Rambam says, better to give to the poor. Why? It's the greatest simcha. And another thing, a person who does that is Doma Lishchina. He's like the divine presence itself. As if to say, part of Purim is relinquishing the poisonous trail, which ends nowhere, of trying to be like Hashem, and embracing the trail that actually does allow a person to be. It is the kosher v'yisem kelokim, to emulate him. And that is a wonderful atmosphere in which to view these mitzvahs of Purim, and specifically the mitzvah of Matanis Levyonim. I wish you all a Ferech of Purim, Mitzvah Hashem. We will meet you.